You're listening to SBS Spice. Find what's making South Asians tick or ick with Suhaila and Dilpreet on the SBS Spice podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Saman, thank you so much for joining me today for SBS Spice. You're an author, editor, journalist, playwright, and have also dabbled in radio. Storytelling is second nature to many South Asians, but you've made an extensive career from this foundation. So your first novel, The Matchmaker, came out in 2023, and your second novel, which just recently released, The Sex Lives of Married Women, just released in April earlier this year. Both novels are romantic comedies, and they indulge in the lives of its South Asian protagonists. Shout out to Sophie as well from the second novel, but that's where we get to see that aspect of your writing come through, is through your South Asian protagonists and romantic novels specifically. Where did your interest in the romantic comedy genre come from?
Yeah, I grew up on 90s rom-coms, right? And so I am a huge fan, and I'm still waiting for a resurgence of, you know, that sort of 90s, sort of early 2000s.
The classics.
Yeah, the classics. I want to see just a good two people falling in love and funny things happen and, you know, getting a few laughs and being entertained, right? Mm-hmm. And I wrote The Matchmaker during COVID lockdown, and it was like a really dark time. And it was funny because before I got to writing The Matchmaker, I was doing very sort of dramatic, heavy literary types of novels. So I wrote three manuscripts that actually never got published, and that was written in the UK until I turn to something a bit more popular. And I thought, let me try and find a way of entertaining people. Generally, you know, what I find is humor. Humor is great to be able to express deeper and, yeah, I guess like harder things, right? So for example, in Matchmaker, we're talking, you know, Saima is a second generation immigrant, but there's trauma in her life and her mom's a single mom and she's divorced and like all these things about having a divorced single mom in our community, what does that look like, you know, as well as, you know, like having people judge you for being single at 33, you know, what does that mean? Why does that exist? And then this whole concept of, you know, arranged marriages, which I think is incredible that this tradition has been going on for like hundreds of years and still exists in modern day, like, you know, Western societies, because I think it's a way for like many, like, people within our community to hold on to tradition, right? Why does that exist? So those were like bigger, deeper things, but I wanted to present them in like an entertaining way, like, you know, make it fun and make it funny. And so like when you look back at like these rom-coms like Sleepless in Seattle and While You Were Sleeping and Have You Got Mail and like, yeah, just countless, anything with like Sandra Bullock, Meg Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Jennifer Lopez. What was that? The Wedding Planner.
The Wedding Planner, yeah.
Yeah, like, just great stuff, right? But while I enjoy those movies, I never saw myself represented, right? There were no brown characters. It was like two white people. And what I wanted to do is to see two brown characters. Like even to this day, if you have like a brown person or a black person in love with someone on a mainstream show, often it'll be in an interracial relationship, mm-hmm. right? You don't often see like two brown people, I think in America you are seeing more like two black people get coming together, right? But like I see like Dev Patel in, you know, Modern Love, right? Mm. On the Apple TV series, and he's with like a white protagonist. Like
Simone Ashley in Picture This, which recently came out, which is where this conversation has kind of sparked again, is that we do see interracial relationships, but what we lack is an honest exploration of, you know, two brown people just being together.
100%.
Because it is very layered and very nuanced in that.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. And so like what I was trying to say with having two brown people in The Matchmaker, like Cal and Saima, is that you can come from the same ethnic cultural background but be very different people, right? We're not a homogenous group, right? So when you call us the South Asian community, we're just so different, as you know, right? We all come with like very different perspectives, very different backgrounds, like political leanings, like it's completely different. So I wanted to show like we're not a big homogenous group, and then you can have two brown people from the same like Pakistani community in this case, but have like very different experiences growing up, very different parents, like, and then still have this whole rom-com aspect. So that's what I really want to do, is to show that, yeah, Like, I go back to it, like this homogenous, like, especially in the way we're represented in the media. It's like, we're all represented as like the Somali community, you know, the Arab community, the Muslim community. What's that even mean? Like, we're all so different, right? And so, like, yeah, I did that. And actually, it did really well. Like, you know, people really responded really well to it. And so when with the Sex Lives of Married Women, I was like, okay, I want to see what love looks like, not at that initial stage where it's fireworks and butterflies and amazing, which is what a lot of like books and media look at. I want to see what love, or talk about or write about what love looks like when you've been with somebody for a long period of time, right? So like 10, 15, 20 years. How does love change, you know? Because it's definitely not that initial passion, those sparks. How do you keep maintain a relationship and do it with brown people, right? And show different kinds of relationships. So in the case of the Sex Lives of Married Women, Rani is in a relationship with someone from a similar background to her. You've got Sophie, who's like the outlier, you know, the white lady. And then you've got Mina, who's in an interracial relationship. And she is a second generation immigrant. And she, you know, does like do a whole lot of things, which makes her, unlike her sister, not the model migrant. And that's the other thing I really wanted to explore, is that whole model migrant narrative that we're fed when we not only like move to this country, but grow up in this country, right?
Yeah.
Which was like, put your head down, do the right thing, exceed, you know, in whatever profession that you're in. And yeah, and pay your taxes and don't cause trouble. And then, you know, we love you. Otherwise, if you question, we don't really love you that much, right? And that's what continuously you'll see in the media, right? Mm-hmm. If you protest, or if you, you know, talk about something in a way that is against that mainstream narrative, and suddenly you're being called out, right? Or if you're expressing your way yourself through your heritage, being like, oh, you do you not want to fit into society? And then straight away you get this feeling, well, then you only like me if I'm being in this very narrow way of how, you know, you expect migrants to behave in your country. It doesn't mean that I truly belong, and I can't be, you know, I can't really be my authentic self. So anyway, those were all very complex things that I like to explore. But at the same time, what I really want to do is to make it entertaining, to make it, try and find elements of funniness in it, you know, and draw a mainstream audience to it, because I don't necessarily want to talk to the people who understand or agree with what I'm doing. I do want to talk to them, but I also would love for people who might not at all have thought of what it's like to be an immigrant in this country or be Pakistani in this country, and then suddenly learn like, oh, okay, for the most part, you guys are just like us. Like, you know, like our, ultimately we're all like trying to get through the day and, you know, make a living and fall in love and have fun with our friends and all those things, you know? And so through my writing and my novels, that's what I'm trying to do.
Mm. Well, I mean, part of being human, you have those emotional side where, you know, things are painful and you've got to work through them, but you can also be funny and laugh your way through it and love your way through it, right?
Yeah.
I would love to go back to the point about how both novels explore intimacy, right? In terms of the spark that is at the start of a very new relationship and how that spark fizzles when you get into a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And also the intimacy that comes with having vulnerable female friendships, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you believe books can shape the conversations we have around intimacy, especially for the South Asian community, where intimacy, sex, and all these taboo topics remain taboo and we're kind of finding our way out of that? What kind of role do books play in shaping those conversations?
Can I just say, reading in itself is a very intimate act? And I mean, like, I'm a writer, I'm an author, but at the same time, I know people are just reading less, okay? And I really encourage people to read more, because the time you spent with a book, a novel, is a fairly decent amount of time, right? And when you find yourself moving into these stories, moving with these characters, the act in itself, inhabiting those worlds, is quite intimate, right? Mm. So for me, being able to express fully what it's like to be, you know, a person of that certain unique, you know, perspective, say Mina or Rani or Sophie, is best expressed through a novel, because a reader can really get inside their world, really inside their heads. So that's intimate in itself. Intimacy, it was really tricky, because I was like, I knew how sex is never spoken about in our communities, okay? And if anything, we're told, just don't have sex. Just don't do it, okay? Mm-hmm. And then even when we're married and we're having children over, no one ever talks about sex.
Yep.
Okay. So there's this whole like, it's happened. Suddenly there's a baby. Oh like, my goodness.
Where did it come from?
Magic, right? And there's billions of us. So yep. like, we're clearly doing something.
We know what we're doing.
We're doing stuff. And you can see, like, I always look at like these ancient texts, you know, where you've got the pictures, right?
Yep.
Really sexual pictures, like the Mughals, right? Mm. Like
not just texts, but like sculptures as well that depict all these things. And our relationship with sex as South Asians has been happening for centuries.
Of course.
It just came to a halt with colonialism.
That's right.
And now we've still got that fear attached. I think fear is the driving force behind this taboo.
Yeah.
Is I think we all want to talk about it, but we don't know where to start, right? And that's why I would like to ask you, like books, you know, creating that conversation, because it is a very personal, individual act, means that you can really dive into that topic. And that's what I guess your books are doing, is allowing for readers to explore it themselves through these characters. So I would love to now move on to how the novel foregrounds female relationships, right? And as any woman is, we're all very complex and we're all very individual and there's a lot of layers to us. And how did you consider the complexity of female relationships when you were building the world for Mina, Rani and Sophie?
Yeah. So one of the central questions that I wanted to ask, which is something that I've been seeing quite a lot in the media, is are the most important relationships in our lives the one we have with our partner or is it the one that we have with our friends?
Interesting.
Yeah, because so I know quite a lot of people who are, you know, have left partners, who are going through divorces. And so in many ways, partners come and go. But I know people who've had the same friends since they're in primary school and they've navigated lives together, you know, high school, university, like marriage, children, post, you know, what like menopause, like what does like that look like? That whole concept of growing old with your friends is like is incredible to me, do you know? How lucky if you are able to. And so I really wanted to explore that. And also as someone who has had, so I had my three kids in three different countries, right?
Yeah.
So I had my daughter in London and then my son in Dubai and then my youngest son here in Sydney. And throughout it all, like the people I lent on quite a lot were the friends that I made in those different places. Because the other thing that I'm really conscious of, which I wanted to write about, which I have in this book, is that we all need a village, okay? So that, that is well known. But because we don't and because we're living in such individualistic societies and communities, we make our partner become that village, right? So then that partnership, like, you know, you're being each other's, like, friend, confidant, counselor, therapist, lover, like, you know, husband, of course, but or whatever, like boyfriend, but you're being a whole lot of things and that puts so much pressure on that
one person. Exactly.
Do you know? And so how do we sort of remove that pressure and sort of not have just that one human being carry that entire burden of being everything to another person, okay? Because at the same time, we're working, you know, we're parenting, we're doing like all kinds of things. So these are the things that I was trying to explore through these characters as to how does it look. So in one case, like the relationship cracks. It can't, you know, hold it together till the end. In other case, it does crack, but then they find a way to get back together. And so there's different ways of how I've seen people navigate that. But coming back to sex, I was really nervous about how this book would be received, okay? So, like, Matchmaker was really sweet, cute. Everyone had a really lovely reaction to it. This was something when I told another friend of mine who's a writer who's also South Asian, and I said, hey, this is the title of my book. And she's like, geez, you're brave. You're brave writing about this because we don't talk about this in our communities. And I was like, well, maybe it's time. It's 2025. Like, let's do it. It's not like, you know, like I'm talking to it from the perspective of the diaspora, right? So I'm like, we've moved away. We're living in like the West where it is very open. How does that conversation now feature within our communities living in the diaspora, right? But at the same time, it's really interesting because even people who are not immigrants or who don't come from South Asian communities have also been a little bit squeamish about talking about sex. And I think it's just generally something that is people feel scared to talk about. And it goes right back to, like, when I think about my daughter, you know, like, I want her to be able to speak openly about getting her period. Okay. Yeah. That's one of the things that we're still to this day, like, girls aren't open about, like, in the office. Like, if you get your period, you're like hiding, like, your tampon, your pad somewhere, like in your sleeve or something. Like, it's like a shameful act that you're doing, even though it's like, we're all having it.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yep.
Do you know? And so, like, for me, this book was just a way of removing that sort of shame. And shame is really something that I'm very passionate about, thought a lot about.
Yep.
Because shame has been used, especially in our communities, but really just generally against women all the time to keep us quiet. Okay. Yep. You're bringing dishonor. You're bringing shame on yourself, on your family. Like, how gross that you're talking openly about. How dare you be so bold?
This is SBS Spice.
I would love to also add, like, yes, we are told that you're bringing shame to yourself, but 90% of the time, it's always you're bringing shame to your parents, you're bringing shame to your family, you're bringing shame to your community.
Yeah.
And so that aspect of shame is very much removed from your sense of self, right? Yeah. Because it's a selfless act to consider how other people might be feeling when you're trying to be your honest self, right?
Yeah.
So that's where, I guess, if everyone is having sex, if everyone's having their period, as you said, why is there still a space to have that shame?
Yeah, I mean, look, because it's just been carried down from generation to generation, right? Like, we are, like, told, we can't talk about this. This is, like, an embarrassing thing. It's embarrassing, okay? Why is this embarrassing? Like, you know, I do not want my daughter to have shame around her periods. Why should you be embarrassed about it? This is literally a natural thing that your body's doing all, like, every month. In fact, it shows that you're healthy. You know, like, it shows that it's a good thing, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in terms of sexuality, like, there's so many, I mean, like, I, as a straight person, cannot talk on the behalf of people who are queer or LGBT, but, like, there's so much that if you are, you need to hide about yourself and who you are. Again, that's shame, okay? Mm-hmm. You can't be your true self, your authentic self, all right? Being able to explore relationships openly, right? Like, we're told, like, literally the first relationship you should have is the person that you end up being married to for the whole life. It's like, okay, what if they're not the right person,
exactly,
right? Like, and then who... Do we know ourselves yet? Like, we're suddenly in this relationship. We're meant to be with this one person forever. I don't think that's right. Like, go find out you. Go find out what you like, who you like, and what brings you pleasure. And that's another thing that I deal with, okay? It's like female pleasure, right? And that's just generally, not just in South Asian, just generally across the board, we don't talk about female pleasure so much. And it's always... Even sex, especially in, like, the mainstream, is catered to male pleasure. What is getting men off, right? Mm-hmm. But why are we not talking about what is making women, you know, orgasm or, you know,
masturbation, for example. When did we get told about female masturbation?
Never.
Right?
Literally never.
Exactly.
Like, right? Like, you never talk about it. They don't talk about it. I can tell you that. They don't talk about it at school still, right?
Yep.
It's literally, sex is dealt with in a very biological way, and it's really dealt with how do you prevent it? How do you not do it? And it's never talked about, like, we've got these organs and they do a certain function for a reason. And actually, a lot of it is to do with pleasure. Can we talk about that, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, like, sex and pleasure and all the stuff that I deal with is in the book is a good thing. But I think if you start talking about it now, it, I hope, allows for the conversations to be more open about some of the bad things, right? People have had really bad experiences when it comes to sex and when it comes to all kinds of aspects of, like, lives, which we're said, oh, we can't talk about. That's because of shame, you know, because of dishonor, right? And I want people to be able to say, no, this happened to me. Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to openly talk about it. Right. So, so I just really want to remove the stigma around shame in our communities. And it's really important to me because even when I go back to Pakistan, I mean, Pakistan is like a whole other level, not even coming from like the Australian context, but so much is done undercover. Like, so I find it fascinating when I went back a couple of years ago, you know, young people are in relationships, young people are dating and doing all sorts of stuff, but they're just doing it, like, mm-hmm. behind closed doors. It's not open, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's because we're all denying the fact that young people are young and they have, like, you know,
Sex lives
and they have, like, desire, okay? Yeah. Why are we denying desire? Desire is just a fact of life, okay?
And all genders have a desire. It's yes. not just men. No. Women want it just as much,
That's
right?
That's exactly right. And we're meant to hide it. And if you are told, like, if you act like, oh, I have desire, you're like, what, are you a slut? Like, what's wrong with you? How disgusting of you, right? And that stuff makes me really, really angry. And I'm like, look, I'm at the point now where I feel like, gosh, I need to be able to at least start this conversation just, you know, so that maybe some generations around, you know, like, who are coming up and, you know, are around me are able to have, like, perhaps more honest conversations. Mm-hmm. But I think the one thing that, I mean, it's only been a week since the book came out, is that I've been surprised by how open people have been about being receptive to these conversations and saying, yeah, I think it's about time that we talk about it.
It's because out of that frustration for not having those conversations, we feel more fueled to just say it out loud and say whatever's on our mind, right?
Yeah.
So wrapping up slowly, I would love to know your thoughts on whether we are at a place as a community to be able to openly talk about these things and have that space to remove that shame and remove that stigma. And also, as a parent, who do you think is responsible for starting these conversations?
We're definitely not at a point in our communities to have these open conversations. What I find incredible is relatively young people moving to this country, right? So people literally late 20s, early 30s who are parents are still following the same thing that their parents did, which is like, oh my goodness, I'm now, and I'm talking about first-generation immigrants who have moved to, so I have quite a lot of relatives who've moved to Australia as adults, right? And then are just so terrified by thinking that, oh my goodness, if I allow my child to be open and talk about things like these white people are doing, then they're going to go crazy and they're going to just become like this rebellious, like out of control individual. And I would tell you no, okay? Like, kids will do whatever it is that they want to do. The biggest difference is whether they tell you or they don't.
Yep, 100%.
Okay. And, you know, you and I, we both went to school in this country, okay? And
how much did you hide from your parents?
Of course.
A lot.
And it's not just me, right? Like, I just look at my friends. Like, I mean, like, I would say my parents were fairly liberal, but friends whose parents were not, like, mate, these were the ones who actually did, like, the most rebellious yep. things, okay? Because suddenly they had freedom whenever it was. Like, it was that little bit of freedom that they would find, and it would just be so much of their true selves that they could not talk to their family about, okay? Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, please, I've always tried from, like, my kids from a very young age just to have that open line of communication. I'm like, just tell me anything. Like, honestly, I'm so chill about most stuff, okay? So just tell me. I'd rather you tell me than to lie to me, okay? Yeah. And so I would really, really encourage people to have those open conversations. But I'm seeing, like, yeah, just like family members who are having, who've got toddlers and little kids. And I think a lot of it stems from fear, okay? Mm-hmm. It's just that you are not used to being in this country, and seeing all this stuff looks really scary because it wasn't your experience growing up.
Yeah.
But please honor the experience of your children growing up in this country. And that means just allowing them to discover who they are, okay? Because that will be different from you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably a good thing, okay? Yeah. Because you moved here, you made that choice. So you can't, and I've seen so much in our communities where people try to have these little, I guess, communities of Pakistan. I can speak from a Pakistani perspective, or even like Indian Muslims, right? Where we're just trying to emulate what we left behind, all right? But as much as you try, it's still a different society. It's still a different country. And your kids are going to have a different experience. You should. You know, you moved here. Just go for it. Like, what were the things that you've always wanted to do? What was it? What was the reasons that you moved to a place like Australia? Go for it, discover who you are, and open your eyes and minds, because I think that would help the next generation. And hopefully it means that they don't have to hide themselves from you.
Well, how amazing is it to be in this space where I get to talk to you today about, you know, the desire as a woman to have sex and be able to just use words like sex, right? So from one storyteller to another, I have to thank you for being part of that conversation. And yeah, all the best. Congratulations for the Sex Lives of Married Women. And thank you so much for joining me today for SBS Spice.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been amazing.
For more hot takes from South Asians in Australia, find and follow SBS Spice on Instagram at SBS Spice or on YouTube by searching for SBS South Asian. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button.